podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Manchester United Redcast. It's me, Chris Curley, for another week of analysis of what's been going on at Old Trafford on and off the pitch. And joining me after what has been a traumatic week is the only BP I know that doesn't have an environmental malpractice lawsuit when he has a leak. It's Ben Paul. Hello, Ben.
Best intro ever. Hello.
And of course, joining me in our threesome is a man who I can confirm for a bet changed his last name to Riley because he's a huge fan of Countdown's Rachel. Dan, that's correct, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100% correct, yes. My previous name was Daniel Vorderman.
And of course, Rachel Riley is a massive red.
Well, let's start with the conundrum, which is Man United this week. Can you see what I did? I mean, it's like I've
this
made
is slick.
Slick, right? It's just slick. I mean, last week was a big week. We predicted last week it would be. Obviously, with Southampton, we won 9-0 as a record home victory, as per with Ipswich. But we're kind of going to gloss over that because we were happy and on form. And, of course, we have to turn our attention to what happened on Saturday night against Everton. Dan, before we go through goal by goal, what's your overview of what happened on Saturday night?
I think it was... it's football at the end of the day, and to throw in a cliche there, the beauty of it, really, is that you never know when a game is won. So that is kind of the beautiful side of this game.
Say, Dan, didn't you know when the game was won? Wasn't there a 94th minute message on our chat?
No. Yeah, I mean, it was unlike me. I kind of said this was a great result. Unfortunately, it was switching off. I mean, what the one thing I think that is always frustrating is those, and I'm not going to blame Axel, but giving away a silly foul that allows the opposition to get into your box late on is always a really frustrating and an annoying thing. Giving away a silly fouls. But I think it's kind of overall my feeling was of immense disappointment, but then a sense of, I was almost pleased the next day feeling that sense of disappointment because it shows how far we've come. It was, these things happen. I think it happens too often with us with the set pieces, and that's something we kind of clearly need to address, because I think if we don't address that, we won't quite get to that next level. But it wasn't a defeat, and so I'm looking at it now with that kind of those rose tinters on, and we'll have to see how it goes on. I mean, other points will be dropped along the line. It was a frustrating result though, because we had it, the victory was ours, and we just threw it away.
We'll come on to the match goal by goal and kind of relive the game, and we can also draw attention then to Ben's WhatsApp text, so he shouldn't be too cocky about on Saturday night. But we'll get to that. Ben, you know, the Glazers won the Super Bowl last night. Yep. Mm-hmm. They bought Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. It helped them win, coming from a team that was really, you know, a losing team to a winning team. Brady clearly brought that elite mentality to that group of players and that organisation. So if the Glazers and the Bucks won the Super Bowl last night, did Man United super bottle it on Saturday?
Oh, very good, very good. No, look, sometimes you win a game, smash and grab. You win when you didn't deserve it. Last night was the opposite. I felt injustice. It was a massive kick in the bollocks. There are so many positives to draw from the game. We were so good, especially the attacking half. That four at the top were fantastic. You know, Green was back in form. Rashford was... All right, he scored a few chances, but Cavani was majestic and Bruno is Bruno. There are loads of positives, but bloody hell, that was a kick in the bollocks. I don't think we bottled it. I just think we were guilty of silly mistakes. Sometimes we don't take our chances. Last night, last Saturday night, we didn't take all our chances, but it was very much a game of hapless defending. And I will play the blame game, and I will blame De Gea, and I will say that I hope he's dropped right now, and I hope Henderson comes in. And I don't give a shit what anybody else thinks. Henderson, he commands that box. De Gea was pathetic. He parried, like he did against Sheffield United to lose us that game, parried pathetically, didn't command his box. So did we bottle it? No. We were just error-ridden.
Well, I think we have bottled it. I mean, I think we have bottled it. I think there's a pattern of bottling behaviour. And when it comes to big moments and big games, this United team bottles it. It bottled it in the semi-final in the Europa League against Seville last year. It bottled it in the semi-final against Chelsea. It has continually bottled it in the big games. When there's a chance, when there's a chance to put pressure at the top, whether it's Liverpool or City with... even at Anfield, the point at Anfield now looks rubbish with Brighton, Burnley and City whooping them yesterday. That looks like a rubbish wasted point when that team is crumbling before our very eyes. Arsenal again the Saturday before, Sheffield United bottled it. So this was a big week for me where we couldn't bottle it. And I think we did on Saturday night. I think, you know, you're right, everything about the attacking teams playing well. But at the back, we bottled it. But let's go through goal by goal. Dan, we got off to a really good start with Cavani, who I love and adore for his wavy, bouncing hair, scoring the first goal. That was the kind of goal we have missed, haven't we?
Yeah, well, I think we've said it before. I mean, he gives us that he gives us that point of the spear. And I think, you know, that's something we've definitely missed, the sort of the presence up front, which is, you know, absolutely something which we don't quite get from any other player. And I think that we've always been a side that, you know, wants that presence up front, a club, if you like, that wants a presence up front. And I think he's providing that, which we haven't had probably since Ibrahimovic's departure.
And Benny, is that penalty box predator? And if we can score scrappy 6-yard goals, that's going to help us, isn't it?
Of course it will. And he's clever in the box. You see the waiting game, and he takes a step back and he just creates space where there isn't really space. But, you know, credit to Rashford. That was a pinpoint ball. Beautifully played.
Well, you know, in the whole Premier League, Cavani is second with headers. 4 out of his 6 goals have been headers.
Yeah, and Calvert-Lewin's the top one, isn't he?
Yeah, Calvert-Lewin. Who'd have thought that? But we'll come on to that. We went up to 2-0 with Bruno. And Dan, online, everyone got very excited about that Bruno goal, particularly at half-time. Even Man United's own account tweeted about it on yesterday, comparing that goal to Cantona's chip. I mean, what is your position...
Well, it wasn't. It
whether
wasn't.
This goal was like Cantona's chip,
it just wasn't. Was it really? It was. It was more like a kind of Ronaldo goal in the way that Ronaldo used to hit it with such power and venom, and kind of almost just knowing that the ball would deviate somewhat if he gave it enough purpose and direction. And that was what it felt to me, because it felt like one of those, I'm just going to fucking leather this, and it just dipped over the keeper. Cantona, I mean, the Cantona chip against Sunderland. I'll just check this for...
Yeah, that's Cantona chip against Sunderland. That's what they've compared it to.
No, totally different. I mean, it was like, Ben, I said, it was more like a Ronaldo welly it.
Ben, was it a chip or a whip?
See, I think it was more like the Cantona against Sunderland. But, you know, I like to disagree with you two. It was a chip. It was a chip.
For podcast purposes.
It was a... No, I honestly thought so. I thought it's a chip.
It's not a chip. The Cantona goal.
Whoa, right? That is not how you chip a football.
No. The Cantona goal took probably like, I don't know, 3 or 4 seconds to reach the back of the net. And Bruno's was like in there in a second. So
a chip is when you get your foot underneath the ball and it hits the goal, right? And it goes over the goalkeeper.
You just Yeah, I'm well aware of that because you claim to score them every single week in our BBC five-a-side game 20 years ago.
I did five-a-side, and that was over like five-a-side tiny goalkeepers, and I still managed to chip it.
Wasn't five-a-side no head height?
Not the BBC game.
Not at Pitts in Manchester in 1998. No, Bruno's goal was a whip. It was a Beckham-like whip. Mm. It was a Beckham-like whip, like Tottenham in 99, like away at Deportivo La Coruña in the Champions League. That was a Beckham goal. Anyone who compares that to Cantona doesn't know what they're talking about. And also, that moment of that Sunderland goal from Cantona was that he had bad form. He hadn't played well, hardly scored that much. And it was his last season at Old Trafford. And before that, he'd won two doubles, a league, and another league to come. So don't be comparing yourself to Cantona until you've won something. No one should be comparing him to Cantona until he's won something. Because I can see it in terms of the impact in a year of turning it around, but within 8 months of Cantona being there, we'd won the league. He's been there a year. We haven't won anything yet. So I just think we need to temper that Cantona comparison.
I don't think he was comparing the two players. I think he was just comparing the chip. Anyway, let's digress.
We're 2-0 up. It looks like we've won the game at half-time. We're feeling very confident. We're playing well. United won the game once, but David De Gea makes a mistake, and it looks like Everton are backing it down.
Yeah, it was. I guess it was the team looked like they didn't come out at it as the pros like to say. They like, you know, the game was won, and I think there just wasn't enough intensity and the mistake and the goal to bring them back in, it sort of has two, psychologically it has, you know, two effects, doesn't it? United are sort of like, oh gee, we've let in a stupid goal and heads drop, and Everton are like, we were out of this game and now we're back in it, you know, within 5 minutes of the restart. So it was a bad goal to concede. But and maybe your question of bottle there, Chris, is that then what you do is if you're not a team that bottles it, you make sure that in the next 10 minutes after conceding one, you don't concede another. But I'm going on forward. I'll let Ben pick up.
Well, I think at halftime, everybody saw that Everton didn't have the connection between midfield and attack. James Rodriguez was not spraying the balls around to his front three or two. So therefore, the halftime team talk was going to be easy. And we should have been well aware that once they'd made that connection, that we were going to get under attack. I called it with my Everton mates at halftime. I said, you're going to come back 2-2. I told them. I didn't expect it to be that quick. So the second goal, yeah, sure, should have shut down Doucouré.
I want to come on to that. I want to stick to the 2-1 and that moment because, you know... Maguire got a lot of criticisms for that goal, but that is the goal Harry Maguire is always going to concede, and it's where we're weak at centre-back. And if you play down the ball down the channel of Harry Maguire, you're going to have a chance. Now, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, again, Ben, happened to, running down the channel, was super strong, you know, kept Lindelof and Maguire occupied all night, I thought, and putting a good ball across. But in fact, it probably wasn't a good ball because what was David De Gea thinking? He was neither catching it nor was he punching it, Ben.
No, well, he's got form for hapless parrying. They say he's a bit introvert, and that shows in his goalkeeping. If he'd been the extrovert Schmeichel, you come out roaring and you smack that ball away. You're firm and you're decisive. He wasn't.
2-1, and then a few minutes later, it's 2-2, where with James Rodriguez, you know, has got uber quality in the box when it comes to finishing, and he's proved that at, you know, Bayern Munich, and he proved it at Real Madrid. So why did the 2-2 happen, Dan? How did that happen again? Was that just another defensive lapse, or was that Everton quality to get back into the game?
Well, like I sort of touched upon it before, I think that when you're so comfortable, they say there's nothing more dangerous than leading 2-0 because you're at 1-0 you're kind of you're still careful, cautious. You're only, you know, one goal from conceding an equaliser. At 2-0, you sort of think, well, the game's okay. We've got a nice cushion. You then concede with a stupid goal, and then you suddenly, the psychologically, everyone sort of goes a little bit to pieces, or certainly they did with United. Maybe it didn't help that it was De Gea's kind of lack of confidence could have sort of seep through the rest of the back four. But also, Everton are a very good side, and they kind of capitalised on the indecision and, you know, poor play at the United defence at that point. And, you know, they probably deserved their equaliser, weirdly.
And Ben, you were talking about Doucouré, you know, putting that cross in and picking
out. That's my only criticism of that goal, because it was a good goal. You've got to hand it to James. If there is any criticism, yeah, sure, shouldn't have. I don't think he should have stood back, held off a little. I think he should have attacked the ball a little bit more. It gave Doucouré the time to thread the pass.
You're right, because I think that's in Shaw's DNA. The amount of goals I've seen coming in from that side where he's jogging, fast jogging out to the ball and not pressing the attacker.
Yeah.
That happens a lot with him. That's one of the reasons I've always not liked him, because he doesn't stop the cross. And he, if it had ran out there with some urgency, he'd have made Doucouré think again, perhaps, about maybe I go past him, maybe I come back inside. Mm. Because he jogged, Doucouré had the time to assess the situation and pick Rodriguez out. It was unmarked in the box. Yeah. I mean, it was 2-2, and it was a quick, painful 2-2 comeback for us, because it all happened in a space of a few short minutes. And now United have to go and win the game again, and they do. And McTominay McSauce gets up from a free kick to make it 3-2, Ben, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And, you know, fine goal. I thought that was it. We all thought that was it. And that's his second goal in two games, McTominay. He's coming on leaps and bounds.
Of course, had chances, didn't he? Rashford had chances as well to kind of finish the game off.
Well, he did. And you know, I don't want to criticise Sir Marcus, but he really, I mean, there were squandered chances throughout, but Marcus should be putting those away. He could have put his 4-2 up. And I kind of, again, I was in my chats with my Everton mates, I said, we need to score 4. And I said, we talked about it. Even at half-time, when at 2-1, we said we need 3 or 4. Because they looked dangerous, Everton, and we looked weak. We looked porous. So even though it was 94th minute, there was still something hanging over us.
Dan, you know, we've conceded a lot of goals from set pieces. What did United manage that last 3 or 4 minutes of injury time well enough for you?
Well, no, I mean, the whole thing about, you know, managing the game, seeing out the game, I think that's something which clearly this team haven't quite figured out yet, or haven't, you know, aren't good enough at doing. The one thing you just don't want to do is give away those free kicks, those dangerous free kicks that I mentioned earlier, that just allow the opposition to get into your box, especially when you're not a team who regularly concedes from either corners or free kicks being whipped in. It's interesting you were saying about the needing another goal, Ben. Before the 9-0, I think, and before the defeat with United, Sheffield United, we'd been winning games only by a goal, and I think that's something which, you know, we need to start taking these chances when we are in that position at 3-2. You know, it's about getting a 4-2. And we are doing that with the way we play. We are doing that. Unlike under Mourinho, where we'd probably be thinking, right, we'll just sit back and sit on it.
Well, before City won yesterday, I think, and this might still be true, I've not quite checked the stat, but we have scored the most goals in the league this season. Yet, conceding, we are 10th.
Yeah.
Now, that just can't go on. I thought the last couple of minutes, United were brain dead. I mean, Wan-Bissaka plays the ball inside to Cavani as Cavani's making the runs to the corner flag. And it gets intercepted. The ball breaks on the halfway line. Tuanzebe, who's just come on, probably cold, makes a stupid foul when he's going nowhere and puts us in pressure where we get under the ball. Maguire is deep. I mean, you know, it's another conversation about why is your best header of the ball deep there when it probably should be more in a position where he can attack the first ball. And then David De Gea comes out like he's a pipe cleaner.
No command.
In front of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who somebody had put on the WhatsApp group, I don't fancy your man that much, didn't he, Ben?
No, I just said I didn't think he was that good looking. You know, he was...
When he missed the one-on-one, you were
It was the one-on-one, yes. Even though he was flagged offside at the end of the first half, I'm like, surely he should have put that away. So, yeah, I'm tempting fate a little bit because of your penchant for Calvert-Lewin. But overall, I eat my hat. He was pretty impressive throughout, a physical dominance.
It was funny because I found myself in the situation where the immediate pain of a last minute equaliser or winner for the opposition is not quite the same now, is it? Because of you, I was desperately hoping that the VAR would call a handball on Calvert. Yeah. And I know it's all right. VAR, we are Varchester United. We're going to get away with it.
I know.
And it wasn't. I don't even think they really had much of a look at it because before you knew it, we were kicking off. And
Not even VAR could save us on Saturday night. It was a real mood killer in the Curley household. We're going to talk about how we change that mood going forward and whether this is the end for David De Gea in the first team for a while and give Dean Henderson a go after these messages. So come back and we will discuss everything else that's going to come up this week at Manchester United.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
Welcome back to the Manchester United Redcast. I'm still here. It's Chris Curley. And, of course, joining me in my special threesome are Ben Paul and Dan Riley. We've talked about David De Gea a bit, Ben and Dan, and this is a recurring conversation we keep having because of the mistakes he makes. If you look in the Premier League, his save percentage is 62.9%. He's 22nd in the Premier League.
Jeez.
Right? Only Rui Patricio at Wolves is lower.
22nd? There's only 20 teams in it.
Well, there's all the multiple goalkeepers playing.
Oh, we're keeping the other... Oh, yeah, my goodness.
Right. Rui Patricio is the lowest, 59.7.
Is he?
Yeah. Dean Henderson is 78.6 and he's fourth.
Can I take a punt? Can I take a punt at who's up the top? Is it the guy at Villa?
I actually haven't got that answer. I'm interested in United stats.
Yeah, only I was just interested because I put him in the fantasy team. But I think that's pretty damning, isn't it? Really,
I mean, there were three shots on target on Saturday night, and all three went in.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, what more do you want? What more does David Hayard need to not do for Dean Henderson to get a proper run in the side? Because I don't think we can go any further with this goalkeeper situation into another season.
Well, you're kind of hoping he doesn't do a Jim Leighton and drop him and destroy him. But I think he's got no choice now.
Well, I think that there was a time, wasn't there, where this sort of happened. My dates and times aren't great, but earlier on in the season we had a similar situation, didn't we? And Henderson came in for a few games, and then De Gea was kind of put back in, and then I seem to remember he kind of put in a couple of great performances, but he seems to have sort of slipped. He seems to have regressed again back into that pattern of you know, making you know,
this is a two-year pattern now. This is at least a two-year pattern. You think about the mistakes last year, his soft hands, his lack of courage in his decision making. You know, they've surrounded the keeper on him. He got done for the goal, didn't he, at Sheffield United, because he really wasn't strong enough. People know he's not strong enough. He's, you know, with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, he should have actually probably done a bit of a Jordan Pickford and come and cleared him out.
Look, my overall take on De Gea is, I think if you are someone who really wants to achieve greatness in the game, De Gea would have left United and gone and played for a club where he was going to win stuff. But he was more about, it seems, just staying where he was and becoming the highest paid goalkeeper. And I think that basically says a lot about his mindset, you know, and maybe it's time to cash in.
Ben, are you staying for 350k a week, or are you going to go and try and win trophies elsewhere?
How much money does he actually need? He's got enough money to live for the rest of his life quite comfortably. He's got it. I mean, I just want him to go at maximum market value. We were talking a year or so ago at him being a £75 million goalkeeper. I don't think he's £50 million or even less. I think his market value has gone way down. But that's United's thing, isn't it?
Well, no one's going to spend that money now with COVID pandemic, no fans coming in. No. All the rest of it. No one's got that money. I mean, I don't think anybody had that money anyway for a goalkeeper of where he could go.
I think at the moment, I would. My feeling would be Henderson gets in now and gets a run. You know, just that, like, Henderson now gets a run and he's allowed the errors, a few errors that De Gea has been allowed, but you give him the run and you see, you know, and maybe that run is till the end of the season now. And then you make your decision at the end of the season and say, is Henderson quite good enough? Do we then either try and sell De Gea or maybe just go into the next season? Because don't forget, De Gea is what, 31? I mean, we could easily, you know, a better, if you like, economic thing might be to hang on to him for another season and then try and sell him later on when maybe more money has come back into the game, if that is going to happen. But I think you've got to give, if you're going to put Henderson in, it's got to be in and not just for a couple of games and then bring De Gea back, because you're never going to know if he's good enough.
Totally. And I think it's the type of mistakes that De Gea is making, but also when he's making them. You know, you 2-0 up just after second half starts. You've got to be strong and have your concentration at the top level for that kind of thing. So that decision of parrying it out, in either court, I thought he dropped it at first, but he actually parried it soft into the middle of the goal. I mean, they teach you that day one of goalkeeping.
Well, there was that.
And when he makes them are the problem.
Yeah, well, yeah, interesting you say that, Chris, because obviously we talked earlier about bottling games, and that semi against Chelsea, what was it? It was just straight after half time, wasn't it? We're 1-0 down and he lets that one in, and then you know that's it. It's gone. The game's gone at that point.
That's what's going to happen at goalkeepers at the top level. You're going to be cold for a long time and then you're going to need to perform. And if he's been focused for 10 years, that's going to wane. I mean, even Alisson made his mistakes yesterday.
Well, yeah, because his feet were cold, wasn't it?
Because his feet were cold. But Ben, I think we're in a similar situation. I've been thinking about this because I've got not much else to think about right now. And I've been thinking about how we're probably at a similar stage of our evolutionary process that Klopp was at Liverpool before he signed Virgil van Dijk, the top-class centre-half he needed, and Alisson, the top-class goalkeeper we needed. Klopp was scoring goals and he was conceding them. But he signed those two players and it made Liverpool the best team in Europe, as much as I hate saying
that. It's funny you should say that, because there are some centre-halves that we might have been looking at across Europe that could fill that void to play alongside Harry Maguire and give that defence the final keystone that it needs.
Who have you been scouting, Ben?
Well, funny enough, there is... we're looking at Jules Koundé, because, you know, Pep was interested in him last season at €55 million, but Sevilla didn't sell him. He's kind of like a new Cafu. He's a left footer. He's great on the ball. I mean, the skill set is unbelievable. Quick, agile, great passing range. But the only thing is, and he's a left footer, I might have mentioned. The only thing is, he's 5 foot ten. I think you've noticed the fella, haven't you? What do you think?
Well, I've claimed to be 5 foot ten, and that's not tall, right? So I would worry that in the Premier League, whether 5 foot ten is big enough. I mean, he's got loads of great attributes. He's good on one-on-one. He can travel and do the channels. He's good on the ball. I just worry whether he's got the physicality of it. And I've been looking at people like Konate, who's been linked in the papers today, actually, at Leipzig.
Yeah. 6 foot three. Are
you familiar with Konate? You can say no.
No. Is he at Leipzig?
Yeah.
So, because we've been linked with the other guy at Leipzig.
No, Upamecano's at Leipzig, but Upamecano looks like Bayern are in pole position to get him. And his mate is Konate from the Ivory Coast, who's left.
I have a theory about buying centre halves in the Premier League, and that is, I think ideally you buy someone who's played in the Premier League. I would be thinking Fofana from Leicester. He seems to be looking like a real prospect, and he's got a good season of the Premier League under his belt. It's going to cost a fortune, but I personally think, you know, Van Dijk had done it with Southampton, had that experience of coming through there. I would be hesitant to get a player that hasn't played in the Premier League.
So it's like you need someone, you're saying we need someone who can just slot straight in and not have to acclimatise, basically.
I don't think we've got time for acclimatising, Chris. If we want to make that step up, I think it's got to be someone, you know. I mean, are there any other
people? You look at Ruben Dias, arguably City's player of the year, and ironically, the replacement for Lindelof. He's slotted in immediately.
I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't yeah. it doesn't work. But what I'm saying is, I think you've got less. You're taking slightly less of a risk if you take a player that's come from the Premier League. I mean, obviously the difference now is that those players in the Premier League are more expensive. So, you know, Fofana will probably, I mean, God knows what price they'd put on him.
I think Fofana. I think Ben White at Brighton, in that category of, he's been in the Premier League. Ben White at Brighton impresses me. I'm not sure if he's super quick enough for what we need. I mean, the problem, of course, we're still waiting for Adik Baye to really acclimatise, because he's only played 96 games out of a possible 269 games.
I think we have to accept that Eric Bailly is a crock. He's arguably the best centre half at United.
Can I throw a bit more of a wild card? Tarkowski?
I mean, perhaps.
Everyone talks about how good Burnley have been at the back.
I think we need two centre halves.
Yeah.
I think we need two. To get through a season, I think we need to sign two. I don't think you can trust Bailly to stay fit. And Axel hasn't stayed fit either. So what's that leaving you with? You're stuck with playing Lindelof and Maguire, who, you know, can't turn. They can't turn, and Lindelof can't really jump and gets out muscled. So, I mean, that's the stuff that's come in the papers today, is that United are either going to sign a top-class centre-back or a centre-forward. Truth is, we need both, and they're banking on Cavani staying another year to fix that and cover that gap.
The way I'm looking at Cavani at the moment, I wouldn't have a problem with that, because obviously he's going to have half a year to get used to playing with the players around him. I think that another season of Cavani, he doesn't look like he's got any fitness problems.
I agree.
He seems to be in that Ibra bracket of someone who's not. You know, it's not about the pace with him, is it? Anyway, so it's more about the movement and getting himself in the right position. So I'd be happy to take another season of him up front.
Well, listen, we've got another two big games coming up, because they're coming thick and fast. Firstly, Tuesday, it's West Ham in the FA Cup. Bound to be some changes there, you'd think, Ben.
Yeah, I think I don't know what the situation is with Pogba, but West Ham are in fine form at the moment. Obviously, we're going to change the goalkeeper. Baye will come back in with Maguire. I assume Matic will probably play. Whether it's with McTominay or Fred, I don't think he'll risk Van der Vaart. I wish Van der Beek. And I think I'd like to keep the top four the same. I'd like them to play every week. every few days, however, you know, whatever the gaps are, I'd like them to continue playing because they are forming an understanding.
And Dan, for West Ham, are we going to go, or is this going to be kind of a tough battle against Moyes' team, who are in good form?
Yeah, I watched a bit of them. I watched a bit of their game. I haven't watched a huge amount of them, to be honest. I mean, I've just seen their results and been quite quite surprised, because I sort of thought they could be a nailed on to go down this season, but he seems to have got a group of players playing pretty well there. I think it's going to be a hard game. Actually, I do. I think it's going to be a tough game. Well, I've got a feeling we might be having some pens.
Hendo
to win on pens. Who to miss? Declan Rice.
All right, well, put your bet on for that. If you're have a wager with friends, is probably a better thing to say. Ben, do you think we can go through against West Ham? And what's your take on West Brom?
Yeah, I think we can go through against. I think we can beat both of them. You know, the Battle of the West, we will win, because let's look at the positives. We were really good against Everton, and we were fantastic against Southampton. If the team, and we showed a lot of, a lot of strength, a lot of backbone in coming back from 2-2. So I think if we just forget that last minute goal, tying up the defence by sticking Bailly, yes, we will win both games. And I think the West Ham game will be tight. The West Brom game, I'm looking at 3 or 4 there.
Oh. Well, West Brom weren't, you know, so bad yesterday against Tottenham. I watched some of that, and they were a bit of a threat with Gianni up front. Dan, it's Valentine's Day on Sunday, so are you going to be able to watch the game against West Brom?
Definitely.
United are your one true love. That's right, isn't it?
Well, no, of course. Though I have my darling wife is a close second. I'll definitely be watching the game. I mean, let's hope that West Brom don't pull off one of those kind of annoyingly, you know. I mean, Big Sam gets a lot of stick, around the game, but he's a smart man. He's a smart manager, and you know he'll have a plan. So, you know, let's just hope that we can overcome what he's got, because, you know, they're a team that are desperate for the points at the moment. I think they're two tricky games. I mean, we just have to see. And I think it's obviously another one of those things where it's kind of crucial to the rest of the season. If we can come through, still be in the cup, keep that momentum going and get a win at West Brom, then we're still keeping that pressure on City, which, you know, I think I know people have said they're going to walk away with it, but I don't think they will, because I think the Europe's coming up. That they have these mad ricks where he plays odd teams, so I just think we've just got to keep that pressure on them.
Ollie needs to talk about that we're not in a title race, because we are. I still think we are. I still think you're right. I think City can drop points, and we should put the pressure on, because if anything, it's good practice for when we're gonna win it. Because I think we all think we're on the right track. It's just that these massive mood killers happen that put us in a difficult place.
But can I say, on a positive note, when we lost 6-1 to Tottenham, Liverpool then went on to lose 7-3 to Villa. Liverpool are now 10 points behind City. They're going to be 13 points behind when City win the games in hand. That's a fucking positive. They're not going for title 21. You've got to look at the bright side there.
We will. We're always looking on the bright side, taking us back to Rotterdam in 1991.
Yay, yes.
One of our best nights.
If Everton win their games in hand, they'll go ahead of Liverpool. For Liverpool not to be the best team in Liverpool is fucking brilliant. So,
Ben, Dan, thank you once again for joining us this week to talk all the things United. I think we're going to bounce back this week with two strong victories, putting the pressure on. And before we go, remember, forever and ever, we'll follow the boys of Man United, the Busby Babes. Come on, you Reds.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at unitedredcast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.